Welcome to the Indigenous Environmental Justice Project podcast series. My name is Ethan Prasad, and I am a global health student at York University, as well as a research assistant for the IEJ project. This podcast is part of a series of podcasts that were recorded live from the Fall 2019 Indigenous Environmental Justice Symposium. The IEJ project assists in generating a better understanding of what Indigenous environmental justice means. Today, you will be listening to Courtney Arsenault, a recent PhD graduate in community psychology at Wilfrid Laurier University. During her graduate studies, she worked with the Pan-American Indigenous Rights and Resource Governance Network and the Laurier Indigenous Rights and Resource Governance Research Group. Her research and this talk centers around free prior informed consent, otherwise known as FPIC, and her experience in Matawa First Nations. She will also discuss the importance of social needs and the necessary infrastructure in Indigenous communities to avoid coercive decision-making.
My name is Courtney. Thank you so much for having me here. I just wrapped up my PhD program in community psychology at Laurier University, and Dr. McGregor was one of my committee members. She was external on my committee, and I was really supportive throughout the process. We had a really great discussion and just really made it a wonderful experience. So thank you so much for inviting me to share with all of you. A little bit about me. I was born and raised in a small coastal town in northern New Brunswick, and I made the big move to Ontario in 2011 to pursue grad school. I was kind of joking earlier with some folks up there that when I first moved to Ontario, I went to Laurier, and Laurier's a pretty small university, but it was actually huge in comparison to where I went to my undergrad, which had just over 2,000 students. So finding my way to York University was like, oh my gosh, it's like a city here. Beautiful campus. So thank you so much for having me here today. I'm really excited to share a little bit about my research, about free, prior, and informed decision-making, about proposed development on Indigenous territories in Northern Ontario. I'm a non-Indigenous person, and I've tried my best to stay true to the knowledge shared with me throughout this project. And my goal here is really to try to advance Indigenous perspectives of FPIC, or Free, Prior, and Informed Consent. I've spent many years listening and reflecting and visiting, and I recognize the tremendous responsibility that comes with the privileges of having a voice that I can use to call attention to these issues. And of course, having an amazing group of friends and colleagues and mentors have really helped me along the way here. I've been working with the Laurier Indigenous Rights and Resource Governance Research Group at Laurier, and more broadly, we're part of the Pan-American Indigenous Rights and Resource Governance Network, which has given me the tremendous opportunity to meet with and work with and learn from Indigenous scholars and community leaders from around the world. And our collective focus has been on promoting Indigenous people's right to free, prior, and informed consent, and more generally, advancing the full implementation of rights frameworks, such as the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. In 2015, our group was invited to meet with advisors from the Matawa First Nations communities, and we began discussions about collaborating on a research project about their member communities' experiences with consultation and consent-seeking processes. Matawa is home to 9 member First Nation communities, Ojibwe and Cree communities. 8 of the 9 nations are on Treaty 9 territory. 5 of these First Nations are located in the far remote north of Ontario and are accessible by fly-in or winter roads, and the other 4 have road access. And each First Nation, of course, has their own unique, distinct cultures, histories, and community priorities. Some communities have had significant history with past development, mostly in mining and forestry sectors, while other communities in the far north have had very little history with development or mining. But of course, Indigenous peoples have lived in Matawa since time immemorial, and the Anishinaabe people have inherent rights and responsibilities to protect the land. And Matawa First Nation communities have actively been asserting the right to make decisions that affect their traditional lands and its resources. For over 10 years now, the Mtawa member communities have individually and collectively been faced with some pretty complex decisions to make since the discovery of several significant mineral deposits on their lands, notably near the James Bay Lowlands. They call it the Ring of Fire. Might have heard of it. And it's thought to be one of the most significant deposits of chromite in the world. And there's actually several different types of mineral deposits on their traditional territories. But I think the thing we hear most often in the Ring of Fire is chromite, which is actually used to make like stainless steel. And although industry promises the benefits of employment and infrastructure and other economic benefits to First Nations in the Mtawa region, there are, of course, several concerns about the proposed project. The proposed mining, as well as the associated infrastructure, so in order for this to happen, they would need to construct pretty significant roads that would cut through traditional territory. And this, of course, risks permanently affecting the forests, the animals, the waters, and potentially also the impacting the social and cultural livelihood of Indigenous peoples who live there. So these are not easy decisions to make. As member First Nations engage in conversations with each other, as well as with external government and industry, as they try to consider both the economic development opportunities as well as environmental protection. So for nearly 4 years now, we've been working closely with Mtawa to learn what it means to consider providing free, prior, and informed consent to such an immense project. We've heard about their experiences with consultation, or in many cases, the lack thereof, and the challenges and the complexity of this decision-making. Over the years, my colleagues and I have been very privileged to be engaged in visiting and meeting, delivering workshops about FPIC at the community level, preparing these resources. We've made posters and booklets and all sorts of things that would help to promote dialogue about free, prior, and informed consent within Mtawa. My overall research goal in this work has been to advance our understanding of the processes involved in making informed decisions from the perspective of people living in Mtawa, and to promote dialogue about FPIC and the right to decide within communities. So what do we already know about FPIC, or free, prior, and informed consent? Really broadly speaking, FPIC means that Indigenous peoples must be adequately informed about projects that affect their lands in a timely way, free of coercion, and they should be given the opportunity to approve or reject a project. So really at the heart of this is Indigenous peoples' inherent right to self-determination. The right to FPIC has been articulated in several international rights frameworks, such as the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And in Canada, discourse about the United Nations Declaration generally and the right to FPIC more specifically has been interesting, at times pretty contentious, but the fact remains that these foundational principles are still not consistently implemented or enforced as of yet in this country. So I had four main research questions with my work. I wanted to know, what are the roles, processes, laws, rights frameworks that influence resource governance in the Mtawa region? How is free, prior, and informed decision-making described by people living and working in Mtawa? What are the needs, opportunities, and challenges in making informed decisions about proposed development? And what role does community dialogue play in making informed decisions? So I'm just going to fly through some of this stuff, but please do let me know if you have any questions. My research involved an analysis of key documents from the Mtawa office. I did five key informant interviews with staff from the Tribal Council, with people who have key support roles in matters of resource governance. And I also organized two community-level kitchen table talks. So this kind of came about because in some of our early conversations with folks in Mtawa, we were talking about FPIC and the declaration and all that, and they were like, yeah, absolutely. These are rights that we've had forever, but this like FPIC thing, it's not really table talk, right? It's not something that we're necessarily talking about around our kitchen tables. And then they were saying, I think it should be, right? I think it should be table talk. We should be talking about this on a day-to-day. So that's kind of the idea of where, you know, kitchen tables came out of. So that's why I organized two kitchen table talks within community. And the purpose of this was to engage, in the end, I engaged 12 members in dialogue about their perspectives and experiences with FPIC. I started by trying to understand Mataua's experience within larger international, domestic, and provincial contexts. The legal landscape of consultation in FPIC has and it continues to evolve, which in and of itself was described as an ongoing challenge. The need to keep up with federal and provincial government laws and regulations, in addition to trying to stay informed about legal precedents being set on traditional territories in other parts of the country. It adds to the increasing demands on the time of leadership, their councils, and their technical advisors. I developed this figure just to try to wrap my head around these complex contexts, including the many advisors, committees, working groups, whose combined efforts ensure that member nations are well supported when engaging in considering proposed development, which of course operates within legal and political landscapes at the provincial, federal, and international levels that all play a role in how consent is currently understood. But what I really wanted to know was how free, prior, and informed decision-making is understood and described from the perspective of people living in Mataua. So people talked about, they described FPIC as a way of reinvesting in themselves and their own ways. And in this way, they actually spoke about FPIC as something that they're already engaged in through asserting their own protocols and their own community priorities. They also addressed critical views of FPIC in that despite their continued work to assert their right to decide, there remains a power imbalance in their relationship with federal and provincial governments. So people really clearly pointed to the need for a government-to-government relationship that honors Indigenous peoples' right to make decisions about their traditional lands. Participants identified that governments really need to be ensuring that communities' basic rights and health standards are met, and that this would play a significant role in community readiness to participate in non-coercive consultation. They also described the nature of information sharing required for informed decisions. So the need to provide all relevant information in useful and accessible ways, establishing community-determined ways to engage members, and respecting that these complex decisions take time. They also spoke about the legacy of past development, so development in the past, right? And explained that this history needs to be reconciled because it continues to impact the relationships today. We also talked about how community-level dialogue, and what role that plays in making informed decisions. And people talked about how organizing kind of informal table talks or something like that within the community can help to bridge the gap in making some of this specialized knowledge about mining available and relevant. They also described the importance of being able to determine for themselves what is important to discuss. So they talked about wanting to talk about the fundamentals and their day-to-day concerns, their priorities. And community dialogue was identified as key for members to learn from each other as well. So sharing experiences with consultation in the past, or not consultation in the past, past projects, to share environmental observations about changes in the land and wildlife and water. So I learned so much over the last 6 years in my program, and I just wanted to highlight some of the key learnings for me. I really heard people talk about how government should be ensuring that basic social and infrastructure needs of their First Nations are met, and that maybe this should be seen as separate from proposed development projects because it can be really hard for communities to truly and freely consider development when there's real critical issues related to water, housing, health, and other basic rights. So these brought up some, you know, really difficult questions and conversations. We started to ask questions like, if you already had, you know, clean water and good housing, would you still agree to the proposed development, right? So really challenging questions but important conversations to be had. I heard them talk about how important it is for communities to have the capacity to consider these proposals with enough resources and information to understand the risks and the benefits of the project, to be able to consider both the economic development opportunities as well as environmental protection. And Matawa also said that industries really need to be respecting community protocols and timelines. These decisions take time, and the relationships take time, the conversations take time. So this decision-making process should be done in a way that works for that community. To me, one of the most important things that I learned from Matawa is that free, prior, and informed decision-making is really about being in good relationship with each other. Matawa talked about how communities, industry, and external governments all have a role to play in this relationship, which they explain needs to be built on respect, where they can have ongoing dialogue about a proposed project. So for me, my experience highlighted that informed decision-making is not just about, you know, information sharing, but it's very much about ensuring that basic rights are met so that this engagement is not coercive, and that we need to start there. Matawa shared that these conversations are important to have at the community level, and that engaging members in this way can help to bridge the gap in knowledge sharing and translation, while also coming to know how the community defines prosperity for themselves. I came to recognize the complexity and ongoing nature of making decisions about proposed development. Consent is not a one-time thing, and there are many, many decisions to be made involved in such a large-scale project where Indigenous communities play active, ongoing roles as decision-makers. So moving forward with FPIC relationships will take time, and I think that part of that work is understanding FPIC from Indigenous perspectives. Another important part is asking ourselves and our policymakers if our systems support or limit a relational approach to self-determined development. And my thinking is, with my experience, we still have a lot of work to do in that area. So I'd like to acknowledge the leadership of the Matawa First Nations chiefs in this work, our advisors at the Tribal Council, and of course, for the community members for sharing their time and their knowledge. Thank you.
Courtney's research delves into the relationship between Indigenous communities, development, and mining, specifically in Northern Ontario. She highlights that Indigenous communities often struggle to decide between economic growth and environmental protection. Courtney focuses on promoting Indigenous rights to FPIC and self-determination through the improvement of community dialogue, consultation, and continuous consent. As a non-Indigenous scholar, she believes that we all have a responsibility to learn about the rights and worldviews of Indigenous people and to work together in meaningful ways. Thank you for listening to this podcast, and please check out our other podcasts from the 2019 Indigenous Environmental Justice Fall Symposium. Please visit iejproject.info.yorku.ca for more information on resources and upcoming events. Miigwech.